Tuesday, Tuesday, gonna get down on Tuesday. Fun, 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 fun. Party and party and party and party.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
This is Stephanie.
And this is Natalie. Welcome.
And this is it Cry Now? Cry Now, yeah. Smile Later.
Yeah,
it's just been a while.
It's been a while still. We're getting back into the groove of things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we're still recording separately from home because of COVID.
We finally figured it out.
But we did it, I think. I mean, it's obviously not sounding the same.
We're here.
But it's us. We're
we
fine.
Got our COVID shots scheduled for this week. So hopefully soon we'll be in person.
Yes.
What did you do today? How was your day?
It was fine. I was supposed to take my grandma for her second shot, and then 5 minutes before I picked her up, they called me and they rescheduled it. So I have to
They waited until you pulled up in the parking lot. Like, there she is. Call her now. Now we know she'll answer.
Wait until she unloads her grandma and walks halfway through the parking lot.
Wait till she gets in the line. Okay, no, wait till now. She's the next person in line. And then
so she goes on Saturday instead. So
nice.
And then I'm just trying to plan some baking projects.
As you should.
Struggling a little bit with that, but I'm gonna get it done. I'm going to hopefully post some pictures of things that people can buy and eat. What else? Let's see here. Oh, I got another rejection email for a job that I applied to.
Nice.
So that's like number 4, but that's fine.
Ooh, you almost it's have a 5.
It's a numbers game. Someone will accept me eventually.
It's a race.
And I'm losing.
Or are you winning?
Well, maybe I'm winning.
You're winning because I have applied to one job, mm-hmm. two jobs, and I have received, now I'm on I received the email for the second interview for the one job that I really wanted.
That's great.
Well, I was kind of disappointed, like, oh no, I wanted to be off for like 3 months and just live.
Breathe a little bit.
Also, I'm just assuming I'm going to get this job. But then they sent me an email.
Well, of course you are.
Duh. So then they sent me an email about how to prepare.
Oh.
And listen to this.
Oh, I'm scared.
It says, security will greet you. Please ask for Billy, whatever. Huh. You will be required to follow our safety protocol due to COVID. It is required to wear a face mask and sign our temperature check authorization form, at which time your temperature will be checked. You will be provided with a harness and device to wear. This will ensure your social distancing guidelines inside the building, and you will be asked a few wellness questions. Like, what?
A harness?
A harness?
I don't think I understand.
Like, who do you think you are? Do you think you're Louis Vuitton or something? Like, who do you think you are? So anyway, I was just like, I didn't know what to reply. I was like, is this a marriage proposal? Like,
I don't think
I'm jumping off a building.
Are you bungee jumping?
Yeah. I was like, am I going to suicide bridge? Like, what's happening? Anyway, so there's that. And then yesterday, you know, you lent me your glue gun.
Oh yes.
And I couldn't figure out how to get it to work. And then finally I did. And all this glue just comes like oozing, like it just came like, well, then I panicked and I didn't want to waste the glue. So like I panicked and I just grabbed everything I could to glue together. And, you know, now I have my own Huntington Gardens. In my kitchen, so I have 35 air plants stuck on random rocks and crystals.
And you're gonna open a theme park, right?
Of course, it's Jurassic Pork. So okay. Anyway, so that's what we've been up to, and as we explained before,
yes,
we are kind of kind of transitioning into different kinds of stories. If you heard our last episode, you'd know why. And anyway,
and if you didn't, well, then figure it out.
Well, then I highly recommend you put on a harness and you go back and listen to it. But we're going to definitely relate them to Latino things. So please don't think that we're going to be talking about the Night Stalker, even though he is a Latino. But
I mean, he counts, but he's boring.
He counts, but I mean,
he's not boring.
He's not boring.
He's a monster.
You know what's so disappointing about him is that, and look, personal point of view, okay? Don't at me. take away the teeth and like the evil.
Right.
He's pretty hot.
Yeah.
Was pretty hot.
The cheekbones.
It was so disappointing that he went that way. Like, don't you have a brother that could just...
I think the whole family was kind of poison.
Not to say that, you know what? I'm just not going to say anything else. Just edit me. okay. So anyway, so I have a story for you.
Yay.
I don't know if you've heard of the Bone Stalker, the recent one.
No.
Okay. Well, so answer me this.
Yes.
Do you answer your calls from unknown numbers?
Never.
What do you do when someone knocks on your door?
I hide in the hallway and I get as low to the ground as possible so they can't see my shadow.
exactly. So you're doing right. So when it comes to phone calls and doorbell ringing from people you don't know, there's actually a real anxiety and a fear that a lot of us experience. I've read a lot of theories and explanations. A popular one is that people aren't prepared for unexpected or unknown tones. You can't tell if somebody is actually smiling or pretending on a phone call. Uh-huh. And you don't know when somebody's at the door, like you don't actually know what they want. So it's just kind of that fear of like not knowing how to react. I also feel... Now, this is my personal opinion. I feel that some people are super ballsy and confrontational, and not everyone is prepared to be put up to the test, you know, like answering a series of questions. And so to me, that's really all of your faults that are so confrontational, because like, chill the fuck out and stop trying to catch people off guard. Like, this is the real reason, like, my party lines don't exist. But, you know, sometimes... I've gotten calls sometimes from just like friends and they're just like, well, where have you been? Why haven't you made time? Well, we haven't seen you, you know? and it's so like
that, just hearing you say that made my like it's just, heart race. I can't handle it.
It's so like, listen, me personally, normally I'm working a lot in between my regular job or like a side job. So I don't answer because I really like to give my one friend, you, all of my attention. I hate feeling like I can't actually listen to somebody or hear them out completely without being distracted. And you know, because I'm an HPS or HSP, I took that quiz where I'm a highly sensitive person.
As am I.
Right, exactly. Okay, so Latinos in particular are known for avoiding the phone and the person knocking at the front door. I remember as a kid, I recall like when somebody would knock, I would shut everything off. Like I had to look like nobody was home. I would like do like, I don't know, like Jean-Claude Van Damme backflips, like just blood sporting my way out of the living room, like, no! And the fear that was just woven into like the fabric of my being, like mi espíritu santo, like I had to just, I could not answer the door. Anyway, I think Latinos, it can be as simple as, you know, it could be like la migra, or in our case, the police, you know, for like leaving the kids alone. Like, because my mom really left us alone with ketchup and knives. So brown moms really like to tell their kids that the police will take them. And then we wonder why we grow up and we just hate the police. A lot of times you just don't know how to get rid of salespeople and Jehovah's. Sorry. But the biggest fear of all is that it could be somebody trying to break in and cause you harm. Or the other person on the line can very well be like the girl from The Ring calling to tell you you have 7 days to live. So, you know, now that we threw all that out there, the very advanced technology we have now is very different than what we had 10, 15 years ago. And it evolves at a rapid pace. Although the early 2000s weren't that long ago, if you think about where technology was at that point, it's almost like in Victorian times. We might as well have been turning butter in bonnets at that point, because it just feels like such a ancient time now based on what we have now to work with.
Yeah.
I mean, we are doing a podcast, like how? Us. So that leads me to phone tracking. We all know that you've had that moment where you're driving and you see a sign for a casino, and then 2 hours later you're scrolling through the gram and there's an ad for the casino and how they are having like safe fun, and you never even spoke the words, but they tracked your route. They know you saw it, and now they want to tempt you with the devil's games. So where and when did this start? I don't know, but I have a story for you. This is called the Kuykendall phone stalker story. And this is a true story, okay? No fake stories here.
Hold on. I'm just going to go throw my phone in the trash. I'll be right back.
Oh, yeah, you should. No, it doesn't matter. Guess what? It doesn't matter. and if you weren't afraid of answering the phone before...
You gonna be.
You gonna be, baby. Okay. So take yourself back to 2007. Take yourself back. Take yourself back. We were using Blackberries, razors. If you're 13, thank you for giving us a chance. And I love Gen Z. Okay. In 2007, this is the story, by the way. So pay attention. Pay attention. In 2007, 16-year-old Corny Kuykendall from Washington State began to receive random texts from her friends asking her why she was sending texts to them that only said the word gay. She didn't really think anything of it at first. And you know what? Okay, let me stop there. That was her first mistake. Like, because a Brown would have changed their number and sent like a box of shoes close to Mexico to the fam, just cause, like, repent. Okay, so there are three families that end up getting involved in this, okay? They're all neighbors.
Okay.
Okay, so these random texts started becoming threatening phone calls and texts that her and her friends started getting, and they began referring to the person as just restricted, because that was the what would come up on the caller ID would call. Okay, so the stalker was threatening to kill and rape these people.
Jesus.
Threatening to blow up their schools and kill the grandparents and their pets.
Oh.
That is the point where I'd get the authorities involved. Like,
they have crossed a line.
I'll summons all the street gang. They'll join the forces. The net bangers will form an alliance and bring it down. You do not get to threaten the pets. Threaten the grandparents. Go ahead.
They've lived their lives.
They've had their time. But like, leave the dogs alone.
They're innocent.
Anyway, so the messages and calls started to become like round the clock. Like, they were coming in night and day. And not just through the cell phones, but through the landlines.
Of course.
Oh my God. And then they were even getting messages on their answering machines of their own conversation.
No. No.
Wait. The phones started turning on and off.
Stop it.
And wait, the ringtone started changing on their own. Imagine you pay that $17 for the Cure ringtone, and then it changes to like Ashanti, and you're just like,
it's
burn in hell. Okay, they try pink. Oh, anything but pink. Okay, so they tried getting new phones, new numbers, turning them off, but nothing worked. Like, nothing stopped.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So you said pretty much everyone in each household. So even like the dad, mom,
all of
everybody
them.
With phones.
Everybody. And so from what I understood, It was one main family, okay, the girl, the mm-hmm. original girl. And one of the other families was like her sister and her husband and their family. And then another family was just like a neighbor family. So they were all kind of together in this.
Okay.
So they tried getting new phones and new numbers, but nothing worked. They finally got the police involved. And while they were in the middle of explaining this to the police, all of their phones turned on and started calling each other.
Even the police?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm gonna say no because I don't think I could handle that.
I'm gonna call them and find out. I heard she's on Facebook. Like, hey, I'm doing a podcast. Do you mind answering a few questions of the most traumatizing experience of your life? Okay.
No, so, I can't pay you.
So then when they got home after this police report, clench your fists, people. When they got home after this police report, there was a message on the Kaikindal's recording machine at home that consisted of that conversation that they had had with law enforcement earlier that day.
I just threw up all over my house.
Oh my God. Me too. It's all over my clothes. I'm a mess. So her family was just like, okay, Court, is this you? Like, are you doing this, honey? Just give us your phone. So they kind of were like, all right, it could just be her, but she's just like, Mom, no, like, you know, no, Mom, you know, and then like runs her room. Also, like, if this was a Latino mom, she would not be chill like that. Like, first of all, you wouldn't even have a cell phone. Like, maybe you had a can with a string, and that's if you're rich. Like, you do not have a fucking cell phone. Not even a toy. Not even the toy. Okay, so anyway, Courtney wasn't named an official suspect, but she was one of the only ones that they were really even investigating, because it started with her. The police traced all of the calls and all of the messages, and somehow everything went back to her phone.
Of course.
Even when it was off. They got a new security, the Kaikindals got a new security system, mm-hmm. and the stalker calls them moments after the installation, and he tells them that he knew the passcode. Like, okay, the stalker started making comments on the family's clothing so that they knew that he was watching them. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. And the thing was, like, he used a scratchy voice, like a
stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was I know, so it would go from like juvenile, like stupid, like kid threats,
yeah.
to very threatening. And in one of the interviews, the mom says that one of the threats was, I know where you are. I know where you live. I'm going to kill you. And another quoted threat was of one of the neighbors, Andrea McKay. One day she was cutting limes, probably so happy, right? Cutting limes. And then she gets a text that says, I prefer lemons. Yeah. Oh my God. I'd have been like, oh yeah, well, I prefer you get the fuck out of my house. Like, oh my God. Imagine you're just home alone. Anyway. Okay, so at this point, there isn't that much follow-up. Like, the story kind of fizzles out. Mm. I'm not sure at what point this ended, but I read somewhere that eventually the FBI got involved.
Oh.
And that's kind of where the story ends. Of course. Of course it does. Of course when the FBI gets involved. So there were never any arrests. There was an interview with ABC News, but really this was the family... just kind of speaking out, but they weren't seeking anything. Like, they weren't seeking to make a movie. They weren't seeking for a book, like nothing. They just kind of disappeared. So it's hard to accuse them all of planning it. It just seems pointless. And like, I can't even commit to following a recipe. So halfway through, I just stop and reading. I wing it. And that's how we invented the sea biscuit. But Elise investigated. Ask me what a sea biscuit is, and I'll tell you. Natalie makes it. So anyway, police investigated for months after, but they're really just powerless. It was insinuated that they couldn't even rule out the families were making it all up. So they got cell phone companies involved, like Sprint got involved. And they teamed up with the authorities and they were like, we didn't even know of a technology that could hack into the phones this way. But then the net bangers were like, actually, that's super easy. So, you know what? You shouldn't even rely on Sprint to do anything, because I was with them for decades and it was just like useless. One of the explanations that is out there is that the hackers, there are hackers, and they cloned her phone. Apparently it's easy to do. I don't know. It took me, we can't even set ourselves up quickly. So,
Sorry. But we're doing fine. We're doing good.
I mean, how do you clone somebody's phone? I don't know. So another theory I heard is that around this time, the FBI was fucking around with the technology that listens to people's conversation. You know, like the one that we have today, as a way to combat terrorism. And there were some targeted random people in the US that they tested the technology on. And this was one of them. This is supported by the fact that when the FBI got involved, the case just stopped. They could just close, and it just completely closed. So I bet, yeah. You know what? It's just very like, we all know the government is up to some shit. So the government, you know, has access to everything, and that's why you have to not answer the fucking door. Although I believe lots of people don't actually mind being watched and heard. Sometimes it's convenient, like when I run out of Slim Fast and then I blink in my sleep, and then the next day Amazon sends it to me. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you tapped into my thoughts. And like, now you're here and I don't have to do anything. But there's not much you can do, like, unless you go off of social media and you really just configure all your settings. There's really just not a quick way around it. So in conclusion, don't answer the phone and don't answer the door ever. Block everyone and just surround yourself with crystals and air plants. The end. That's my story.
Wow. But can I just give you a little standing ovation?
You can, and you should. Thank
I did.
You.
I did. That was excellent and also terrifying. And I'm a little bit uncomfortable right now.
So you know how I take screenshots of everything, because and I have this separate embedded file in my phone that only you will have access to upon my death. And I just feel like, don't we all kind of fuck around? Like, is anything is anything safe? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is anything really safe? Like, anything could be copied, any message, any story, anything could really just be sent at any time. So we're at a time where it's just like, you should actually just be careful what you're putting out there. You know, anyway.
So your story reminds me of a story that happened to me when I was a kid.
When then?
I don't know how old I was, but it was the middle of summer because we were eating dinner.
It's already a horror story.
Exactly. End of story. It was a summer.
It was a summer night.
Just end runaway of. Screaming. Just runaway screaming.
This should be published.
Two sentence horror stories. We were eating outside and the phone rang. So, and I loved answering the phone. So I ran inside to answer it. Shut up. I was.
Wait, why?
I just did. It was fun.
No, but why?
I don't know. I loved answering the phone. It made me feel important. Okay. So I came inside. I answered the phone. Hold on. Let me make sure nobody's here because I'm self-conscious. Nobody's here.
Pause. Okay.
So I ran inside to answer it and I picked it up, and I was trained as a child by my mom to answer in a very specific way because I was like a 7-year-old receptionist. And I'm going to make up a name for this. I'll say whatever, Rodriguez. I don't know. And I would say, Rodriguez household, Natalie speaking, how may I help you?
Wow.
Anyway, so I answered the phone, and at this point, whoever was calling knew my name because I said it. And
right.
And it was like
your first mistake.
First mistake. But it wasn't my fault because that's what my mom taught me. So it's my mom's fault. Anyway, so he had like this really creepy, like whispery voice. It was disgusting.
Do it.
No, I don't want to. I can't go there. It's scary enough.
Names. Okay.
And he was like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but essentially he was like asking me if I was wearing underwear. And yeah. And if something about like were the boys at school, I don't remember what the fuck he said. It was really disgusting and really inappropriate. And I was very obviously a child. Like there was no mistake. Oh, I was a kid. God. And this adult man was asking me these really disgusting things. And like, I just remember getting really upset and saying, shut up. And I hung up the phone and I ran back outside.
And you never told a soul.
I never told anyone. They were like, who was it? And I was like, wrong number. And I just sat there, like, all sad. You sat there
in your trauma.
Yeah. So.
Oh, my God. How scary.
Horrifying.
Ugh, you know. What? I have no words.
So that was my little...
You finally found a way to quiet me down, to shut me up.
Anecdote.
I am speechless. Ooh. I'm ready for your story.
Okay.
I drank a lot of coffee, so I'm going to be traumatized, ready for you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let me get my notes here. Let me just take one more sip of my coffee. Hold on. My cafecito. Okay. The story I have for you is called El Vampiro de la Ventana.
Oh, my God. I love it so much. I want to cry.
Or in English, I guess it would be like the window vampire, or we'll just call him the Argentine vampire.
I like the first one better.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this is an old story. It's actually, there's not a ton of information on it. So it's a little bit challenging, like finding facts.
Okay.
But I got as much as I could. And I feel like it's enough. It's enough.
I feel like you're saying this, but you actually have 46 pages.
No.
Ready to go?
I don't. Okay. So this story starts in 1935 in Argentina in a town called Monteros in the province of Tucumán. And I know. I didn't know that was a province in Argentina. Tucumán.
Wow.
So, 1935, Florencio Roque Fernandez was born. He was born into, pretty bad poverty, like really poor. They had nothing. His family, there's not a lot of information like on like how many siblings he may have had, but it just sounds like it was rough for all of them. It was a tough time. The 30s, it seems like, were kind of a bad, rough time.
In general, for the world.
And Argentina was no exception. They had all sorts of like political issues going on, and it's just, mm-hmm. It was rough. So, like at an early age, he started to kind of display some strange behavior. Like he was,
I don't like how you're motioning your head in a circle when you're saying this.
You said you couldn't see me, and now I'm self-conscious.
That was during my story for my notes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm covering you. I'm covering your face with my notes because I can't focus. Okay. So
beautiful. Okay.
So he started displaying some kind of weird behavior, and it just got worse as he got older. Nowadays, it would just be like, okay, he's got some like mental health issues happening. But back then, they're just like,
he's HSP like us,
possibly. and his parents, you know, they did the best they could. They tried to get him some help, but they couldn't afford, you know, fancy doctors. They couldn't afford medication or treatment for whatever he had. They did take him, they were able to take him to one doctor, and he basically said, like, he's dealing with some, like, really bad mental health issues.
That's all he said.
I think schizophrenia may have come up.
Oh my God. Wait, I'm sorry. How old was he?
No idea. My guess, if I had to guess, this was probably when he was maybe around 10 or so.
Okay, got it.
So they couldn't do anything about it. But ask me what his parents did at this point.
Oh my God. Okay. I have a few.
Okay.
And they either beat him on a rock with a whip that they made him himself make.
Uh-huh.
They prayed for sure. Prayed to come to the church for sure. Beat him again. and they caged him up and like chained him to a wall.
Okay. No, but not far off. They abandoned him. They left him to live on the street. They left him to fend for himself.
Wow.
They were like, go play over there. And they just peeled out of town. So he was pretty much left to fend for himself. He begged, he stole, he ate out of trash cans. He eventually was, this is so sad. I'm not laughing. I am. He found a cave and he lived in it. He lived in a damn cave. And
I mean, isn't that the dream though?
So that was his existence for a few years. Well, for many years. That's how he grew up, pretty much. Apparently when he was around 15, somehow he got into a movie theater. Don't ask me how, because it doesn't say. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find any notes.
I really need you to note your facts.
I'm trying.
Oh,
somehow he was able to, he probably snuck in, and he saw the movie Dracula with Bela Lugosi, and it, like, just...
It inspired him, as it did all of us.
In the worst way possible. His kind of sick mind saw that, and something clicked, and he was like, oh, I'm a vampire.
Because I live in a cave.
And also, pretty much. So he actually also, on top of everything, he suffered from a condition called photophobia, which is basically just a really, really extreme sensitivity to light. So he couldn't handle bright light. He couldn't, he pretty much, I know.
You're so describing me. So I'm just like, I also am darks and can't handle
so, light. So he would kind of avoid coming out in the daytime. That's why, you know, he would just sit in his cave during the day.
Are you having an intervention with me?
No.
Okay,
sorry. And so he wouldn't come out until nighttime. And when he saw that movie, I think it kind of it triggered some things, and he truly believed that he was a vampire. So he started to stalk women. Mm-hmm. Not good. He started to like follow them at night, and then it just kind of
walking them home.
He wasn't being a gentleman. He had something very different in mind. In 1953, he would commit his first murder. It was January. January in Argentina is summertime. It's like the middle of summer. It's really, really hot. So, you know, everyone's got their windows open at night. It's hot. It's hot as fuck. And he started to stalk. He would look for women that were alone, first of all, walking alone. And he would follow them, and once he kind of was positive that they, you know, lived alone, he would sneak into open windows and kill them and then proceed to bite their necks and drink their blood.
For realsies.
And then he'd run away. And this kind of went on. In total, there were 15 murders over the span of 6 years. It was like more or less 2 victims per year. And the police just...
He was like, I have a quota.
I have a quota to meet. The police just sucked. They were not...
The same police that were handling the phone stalker. Well, we have no leads.
It was pretty bad. They were not taking it seriously. And like, this is a small town kind of in the country.
Well, also probably because they're women and I don't think...
Yeah, they probably didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's just a woman.
Yeah. And unfortunately, there wasn't any information about the actual victims. I would have liked to have given their names, but I couldn't find anything.
Well, because they're women.
Yeah. So the townspeople were, you know, they were like pretty superstitious, and they were hanging crucifixes on their doors and like hanging garlic. And they truly believed that there was an actual vampire on the loose. at a certain point, like by like 1959, 1960, the federal police were called in. It's like, oh, now we need some backup.
Right.
So they brought them in and they were like, okay, let's make a map out all of the different locations of the murders and see what that shows us. Once they did that, it was like, oh, these are all literally in this one central area. It's like, I think there was like a quarry nearby. And it's just so happens that he lived in a cave near this quarry.
He was like, I'm the local celebrity here.
He was actually at this point, he was caught. He tried to take his 16th victim. For whatever reason, he wasn't able to kill her. He left her house and one of the federal police kind of saw him and followed him and was like, oh, he's leaving like the scene of this almost murder. Followed him to his cave and that's where he was detained. He didn't, you know, fight them. He was just like, okay, whatever. This is it. I'm a vampire, so it's fine. I'll escape at night when I can take my
bat. Don't worry, I'll just fly away later.
and they like looked inside the cave and he was just, it's really sad actually. Like, he was not well. I'm not saying what he did was okay, obviously, but
yes,
he was very mentally ill. He was living in filth. Mm-hmm. It was just full of trash and it was just sad all around. So he was
so true for so many mentally ill people.
Yeah, they're just kind of just get lost and nobody cares.
Yeah.
And so he was pretty much off the bat just declared insane, and he was taken to a hospital. Let's see if I can pronounce this.
Oh, great. And an asylum.
Hospital Psiquiátrico de San Miguel de Tucumán.
Wow. Was it on a hill or like in a cliff?
Probably.
Terrifying.
And that was where he spent the rest of his life. He died really early. I think he was about 33 when he died.
Wow.
Obviously, he wasn't in the best of health. Like, he wasn't eating well. He was not, you know.
Oh, he was drinking.
He was drinking blood.
Blood.
Like, how good could that be for you? So... Yeah, so that's pretty much it. That's the story of El Vampiro de la Ventana.
But you know what? That the fascination that people get from characters like that, I mean, mm-hmm. even us.
Yeah.
It's so real. It's like you're there's just like this draw to all things kind of dark and scary.
Unknown.
Halloween, the unknown. Yeah. I mean, look it up. We're doing this fucking podcast now. So, and you know what? As I said before, there was a study that said that people get endorphins, dopamines, or something, whatever, from things like that. So he's just seeking a natural high.
Yeah.
That's so sad.
It is sad. It was kind of sad all around for the victims and for him, because he really kind of had a shitty lot in life from the get-go, pretty much.
It makes me also sad. I mean, aside the murders, it makes me also sad that they just abandoned him in the street.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why are people so fucked up back in the day? Like, I mean, now too, but like, how?
It just shows like that desperation. There's just like, they've got nothing else. And it's just like, well, might as well get rid of this one because it's not, it's not really helping us.
So this one is indeed, yeah, no, it's true. Ugh, awful. Imagine that happened now. You were like, which is my least favorite child?
And oh, just my like... God. Well, if I had to do that with my two cats.
Monster. How dare you?
I don't know. I can't do it.
I feel like they are like, if we could just leave her on the street, she wouldn't come home. Life would be grand.
If we just locked her out.
If we just locked her out and bit her in the neck, maybe. Well, what did we learn today? That you can't trust anybody, especially men. Once again, confirmed. I feel like that's going to be a recurring lesson.
It's
going to
be our theme. Our theme across here. The board. Don't answer the phone and don't trust any men.
And don't trust any men. And period. There's no buts. Just period.
And just live in a cave.
That sounds ideal. See, spa, what is it called? Hot spring baths. spa-like. I'm excited for our next one. I'm not going to tell anybody what I'm going to
call it. Yeah, I'm not going to tell anybody what mine is either.
If I sounded or we sounded a little new to this, it's because we are new to telling stories, kind of.
Yeah, and we're only going to get better. Yeah. So come along with us on this ride.
Every day is Halloween here.
Yeah!
Thank you, everybody. This was our show. Follow us on Instagram at crynow_smilelater_pod or email us your stories at info@cnslpodcast.com. And I'd tell you about our Patreon, but I can't remember the login. So
that's okay.
For now, there's nothing going on. Hopefully you enjoy the show and we have more stuff coming next time.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.